Hello, people, and welcome to the Majlis. This is a weekly current affairs podcast of Radio Free Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. So we are on the verge of another important deadline in Tajikistan, which will present a solid indication on what direction the country is taking going forward. That's about the November 1st deadline when 18 journalists of Radio Free Radio Liberty's Tajik service, Radio Azadi in Tajikistan, risk being left without credentials. If the reporters are denied accreditation, this would add a new paragraph in the list of growing concerns about the treatment of independent media, members of civil society, human rights, and political activists by the authorities. As the November 1st deadline looms large, independent journalists, press freedom, and human rights organizations are unanimously urging the Tajik authorities to back off and let them work. On today's Majlis podcast, we are here to discuss the state of press freedom in the country, the latest developments leading to this point, and other signs of growing repression in Tajikistan. We will also ponder around the question of why the authorities are doing this and what can be done about it. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Yelena Chernyavska, Senior Advisor at the Office of OSCE Representative for Freedom of Media, Steve Severlo, Central Asia Researcher for Human Rights Watch, Salim Jan Ayubov, Acting Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik Service Radio Azadi, Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us on this important topic today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you. So before kicking off the debate, let me flag a report by Colleen Wood of The Diplomat. She just did a story talking about what these journalists losing credentials would mean to the larger question of press freedom in Tajikistan. I just wanted to give a shout out about this and definitely recommend you reading it. And second, today, the way I am thinking to run this show is, first, we will hear the latest from Salim John about what's going on with his journalists and all the details of where we are and what's expected next, good and bad scenarios. I have a number of questions planned for him, and feel free, colleagues, to stop me anytime and ask Salim John what you have in mind. Then in the second half of the debate, we are going to open up the show talking about some related developments in Tajikistan. Why is it happening and what can be done about it? So let's move on. So Salim John, what's the latest on the status of credentials of the journalists as we speak now?
So the latest information is interesting. We have some very small signs that probably under the huge pressure, the ministry will discuss the issue. However, not clear what is ahead. And the morale of the Azadi people in Dushanbe is good. However, we are seeing the decreasing number of the articles, decreasing number of the topics, especially the number of the investigative reporting is coming down. Although all of my colleagues are saying that we will do our job as we should do, as we have been doing in the past, and no worries. And if there will be even no accreditation, we still will find the way to bring, to deliver to our society independent, accurate, objective, balanced news and information. But in reality, so I understand that it's very, very hard for them to be in such a situation when five of their colleagues are deprived of work and they're sitting home, and the date of November 1st is coming closer and closer. I fully understand them and I feel them, that how it's so. But still we have hope, because and my colleagues are pointing out that they are seeing how many people are supporting us on a social media, on different media organizations, and they're happy about and they're full of will and hopes.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of points I would like to expand on what you just said. First, you said you are getting very small signs of some sort from the authorities. Is there any bone to it? I mean, can you expand on that? And what kind of sign is that?
I'm not sure if I should disclose all things, but, you know, actually the language is the same. but the tone is different. As you know, I am in constant contact with the people in Ministry of Foreign Affairs and always asking them, always pushing them. So when there will be a final decision and will you say yes or no or thing like this, this morning the tone was much softer than all the other times. So, and the message was, let's wait a few more days and we will see, thing like this. So, and also from another source, I received an information that the ministry is asking some media experts to think about how to, because if you remember in the statement of the National Association of Independent Media and the Media Council of Tajikistan, there was a very strong point that the regulation is outdated and based on a previous version of the media law. So the ministry is asking some of media experts that have to specify the accreditation regulation, have to update it. So it's also a small sign that probably they will think about the issue. We don't know what they will do first, to renew the regulation or first they approve applications of my colleagues and then to work on renewal of the regulation. I have no clue, but those are small signs that something is going on, some movement is taking place.
Yeah, Selimson, you also said five of your journalists are already sitting home after their accreditation requests being denied. So this is not the first time we are kind of faced with this situation. But is there anything to compare, like similarities and differences in terms of the authorities' behavior between now and the days which led to the situation in which your reporters were no more able to work in Tajikistan? I'm talking about the five journalists who don't have accreditation and sitting home.
Sure. As you remember, the same situation happened back in 2016 when Ozodi published an article about the business interest of daughter of the president, and the ministry revoked at once six accreditation cards and told our journalists to stop working for RFARL. But under the pressure of international outcries, in 2 weeks they decided to reverse the decision and returned all the accreditation cards. So this was something else. But now, of course, because the duration of waiting the decision of the ministry is becoming longer and longer, months, of course, it's a big difference. And so, and that's why probably some of my colleagues are saying that maybe they will lose their jobs forever. Actually, thanks to RFURL for the support that we are keeping all those people on board. And time to time, we are inviting them to Prague. So the difference is that probably the pressure of the whole situation is much bigger than before.
Mm-hmm. Colleagues, feel free if you have any question to ask Selimjan. Also, Selimjan, just thinking of a bad scenario, hope you are never there, but in case if they are deprived of credentials, how it's going to impact your work?
Yeah, of course, we are thinking about Plan B and Plan C and all kind of possibilities. In this case, so we will be working like the RFURL Uzbek service or Turkmen service without bureau, Azeri service also. So we are thinking many, many different ways. Of course, we will survive, no doubt. However, we wanted to be normal as we had been before with the accreditation, because another benefit of the accreditation is that then we will have access to official events, to state archive and things like this, you know.
Yeah, so you are not going to let this situation impact on your production in this other way. This is the plan I heard from you, right?
Yeah, right. Of course. And the people who are supporting us on the social media just saying that it's ridiculous that the government is trying to silence some media organization in 21st century when there are a lot of ways to continue its job.
Right. Okay, maybe here I should bring in Yelena, you here. So, you guys... closely follow this situation, developing situation in Tajikistan, and we really thank you for your support on this. So what is this going to mean to already squeezed space for press freedom in Tajikistan in case these journalists lose their credentials?
So firstly, as you no doubt know, the representative has reacted twice to the situation with the journalists of Azadi on their accreditation earlier this year and yesterday in a tweet asking to reconsider this decision and find a solution which would provide accreditation. I must admit that this situation is not, unfortunately, unique in the OSCE area or nor in Central Asia. And so much so that back in 2016, where, as Salim John has reminded us, there was this situation to which the previous representative reacted, there was a communique, which is available online by the representative on freedom of the media, on accreditation and access to information. And it is, unfortunately, a frequent scenario that accreditation of foreign journalists or the staff of foreign media outlets is used not as providing an additional privilege to journalists in accessing state agencies or information, but as control of the content, as restriction of the content, or as a precondition for entry into the country or obtaining the visa. And the communique clearly says that this is inconsistent with obligations in the media sphere, which participating states of the OSCE, of which one is Tajikistan, took upon themselves. Moreover, the right to freedom of information and freedom of journalists to pursue their professional duties abroad is at the core of the Helsinki Final Act, and it is a sine qua non of building trust among participating states.
Right.
So in principle, it shouldn't be used as a big club which would control, even if this content is viewed by the host country as politicized or alien propaganda, to use a different term.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, it can, you see, accreditation may not, says the representative in the communique, be used as retaliation to such content which is perceived as unpleasant by the hosting country. So that's what we would want to invoke once again, because unfortunately this happens over and over.
Okay, let me get, Steve, your point on that too. I mean, we hope that it never come to this point. Like, in case of these journalists lose their credentials, what is that going to mean to the space of press freedom in Tajikistan, which is already in a bad shape?
It would be catastrophic. I think that what OZOD does on a daily basis is so essential, not just from the perspective of a human rights organization, which is crucial. I mean, there have been so many situations where we've heard about something that's happened. Someone has been arrested. Someone has been interrogated. And, you know, OZOD is first on the scene. And OZOD is really that body that, you know, despite all this tension with the foreign ministry that Salim John describes, and despite this hostility coming from the government, what's so, in a way, ironic about it is that OZOD is, I think, that service that the government, in a way, trusts more than many others to convey its messages. And so I found that, you know, in a lot of really important news stories and human rights events, the presence of OZOD allows situations to sometimes be resolved in a good way. And I think the government, probably large parts of the government, inside the government, I'm sure there's a critical mass of people that understand just how important the presence of OZOD is. So it would be catastrophic. It would compound seriously deteriorating human rights situation, and specifically with regard to freedom of expression. We've seen Asia Plus being blocked recently, another very prominent, important source of news. We've seen what happened to publications like Ozodagon, Taj News, Nigoh. We've seen them all die. And I think this is a hill that I think is great that you know, the U.S. government is, and Radio Free Europe is being so public. And the president of Radio Free Europe, his trip, Jamie Fly, to go raise this issue. I think this is the right approach. I wanted to say to Salim John and to Radio Free Europe, we're happy to see such a robust and public defense of the service because, you know, as we've discussed in previous podcasts, I think Tajikistan is one of those cases where public pressure sometimes does work. We saw what happened with the case of Khairullah Mirsaeed, of the journalist that was freed after a very open social media campaign. And we've seen other cases where Dushanbe has had to relent. And I really hope, and I think this is the right approach. approach. And I think turning up the heat and looking at the other instruments of U.S. government leverage, you know, are important. One other point, I thought I was happy to see the National Association of Media, Nansmit, and the Media Council of Tajikistan make a public statement that may indicate in a way when you have voices inside Tajikistan in the media community speaking out, that may indicate that, again, there may be some moderate voices in this conversation within the government. And one question, I guess, to Salim John would be, and to the radio, is you know, are the Europeans also stepping up? And what can we expect from EU? I think it's really important at this time to get united.
Right. We are going to talk about the reactions, the ones which are already in public, the type of reaction that Yelena was talking about, and what are the other possible reactions which could make a difference a little bit later, Steve. So thank you very much. Now, let's expand the discussion to beyond Radio Free Europe, discussing this in context, how we got to this point in Tajikistan, and why authorities are doing this, and what can be really done about this. So we will continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate here, that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Yelena Chernyavska, Senior Advisor at the Office of the OSCE Representative for Freedom of Media, Steve Severlou, Central Asia Researcher for Human Rights Watch, Selim John Ayubov, Acting Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik Service, Radio Azadi, Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Owozi, I, Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Media Manager for South and Central Asia, here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing squeezing space for freedom of press and civil liberties in Tajikistan. Okay, so let me bring you, Bruce, on here. This is certainly a pressing matter, the November 1st deadline. But how we got here? What have been some of the other developments leading to this point?
You know, this is definitely part of a process that's been going on for several years now. The Tajik government authorities there have done everything they can to neutralize any legitimate political opposition within the country. Going back to, Zaid Saidov years ago when he declared that he was going to have a new political party, and right away they went after him. And he faced multiple charges, ended up being sentenced to a lengthy term in prison. And after that, they went after the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan and effectively banned the party and tried to neutralize it to the greatest extent possible. It's been declared a terrorist group or an extremist group inside the country and can't operate at all. They've tried to get Interpol to go after the leadership that was outside the country. So there's a lot of things that have happened here to neutralize the political opposition. Why is it happening now? Sure, there's many reasons, but of course what we have here is a situation where there's an inevitable power transition that's coming up in Tajikistan one of these days. Emomali Rahmon has been in power since 1992, the end of that, as president since 1994. There's a lot of questions about how much longer he's going to stay on in power, who will replace him after that. So they cleared the field, of any political challengers, and have cleared the field of any voices in Tajikistan that could actually oppose what the government is doing, so that there is only one story being told in Tajikistan about events inside the country, and that is the Tajik government's version of what's happening. Next year, we have both parliamentary and presidential elections in Tajikistan. So this is, on the eve of these two big events, it seems to me that authorities have done everything they can to weight the scales as much as possible in their favor so they can do whatever their plan is in 2020.
Right. Let me also get, Steve, your point that you have a couple of human rights violation-related incidents that you would like to discuss. Especially, we have growing repression against the exiled political activists. Let's talk about that. And then later I want to discuss whether there is any connection between this and the ongoing pressure on independent media in Tajikistan. Steve.
Right. I mean, and I think that I completely agree with what Bruce was discussing, which is this sort of gradual clearing of all potential dissenting voices. We see that in what's happening abroad and what's happening inside. And those are very connected to an increasingly paranoid style of governance. And again, thank you for doing the podcast. Such an important time. We had a really big development when we saw that the Tajikistan's National Bank issued a list about, I'd say, in the past few days, where they added a number of quote-unquote terrorists to a National Bank list. And guess who was on that list? a number of civil society activists who participated recently at the OSCE Human Rights Conference in Warsaw. So this is a direct rebuttal or a direct response to people raising their voices and doing what you're supposed to do at the OSCE, which is raise human rights issues, by putting people on a list, which really has some devastating consequences. If you're put on this list, you can have trouble operating your bank account in Europe. You can be very much at risk of being detained. So we saw one of the former guests of this podcast, Humaira Bakhtiar, the journalist, she was one of the people that was added to this National Bank list of terrorists. And a lot of people have commented with irony that the number two figure in ISIS, Gulmurod Halimov, is lower down on the list than many of these human rights activists. Wow. So that's really a sign, I think, of in a way, a really more and more irrational approach coming from Dushanbe. We also saw in Belarus, at the end of September, the detention of another civil society activist named Farhod Adinaev. Adinaev was actually trying to cross the border from Belarus to Lithuania on his way to a human rights conference when he was detained. And now he is at very great risk of being extradited also on terrorism and extremism charges to either Russia or Tajikistan. So we're really worried about that development. And as I said, we also saw a Tajik activist already deported from Poland in late September to Tajikistan from Group 24. His name is Mustafa Hayotov. So a lot of things are happening which worry us greatly. And I think the OZOD issue sort of, in a way, it clarifies even further that this is a crisis. This is a crisis, a wide spectrum of issues. And so we should take a really hard look at what the policies are.
Okay. And also besides Azadi, I'm sure, Salimjan, you also follow what's going on with the Asia Plus. Is there anything you would like to add on the type of challenges they are facing at the moment in Tajikistan?
Asia Plus actually blocked already for the second years, and the recent thing happened to the Asia Plus is very interesting and very, very frightening, because someone entered the DNS server and changed just one letter O into the number zero. And so the whole web page disappeared from virtual environment of Tajikistan and elsewhere. So it means they're looking for some new and sophisticated ways to deprive people of information. And also what Steve mentioned, I should say that when I stayed for 1 month in Tajikistan, in Dushanbe, and have a different meeting with different people of different levels, including a lot of officials. So the main message seems that the main problem of OZOD is that please do not mention IRPT and the Group 24. It means don't mention any opposition groups in your content, so then everything will be okay. And there were interesting discussions when I'm asking them, all right, so just a few weeks ago, there was an information we published that the head of the parliament said the IRPT was the biggest obstacle of the development in Tajikistan for the latest 20 years. Shouldn't we publish this? No, you can publish that. It's okay, but you shouldn't publish something else, you know. And I'm telling them, is it a double standard? So you want us to publish this and you don't want us to publish something else. So, and it doesn't mean that you are interfering internal affairs of the media organization. Does it mean that you are violating media law and censoring the media organization? Thing like this. So, you know, but still they, even last day when I met those people again, they say, okay, goodbye. So, but remember, don't mention those parties and everything will be okay. I don't know how to explain that. So this is the issues. And also they don't want us to touch the members of the presidential family. But again, I am telling them, look, the family is everywhere. Pick up any type of business and someone is here, someone is sitting there, you know. How not to touch them when the news is coming. And but the main message of mine was that we are not criticizing, we are not rising, we're just informing people that right. what is going on around them.
Right.
We wanted to help you to build educated society, that otherwise you can't build the normal state. All of you know that how many young people went to Syria and Iraq to join ISIS. And do you know why it happened? Because those people were uneducated. And and if you continue that way, so you will bring up another generation of uneducated people.
Yeah. Yelena, the type of issues, the contradictions in the statement of authorities that Salim Jan is referring to, I believe that they are not new to you. So when you guys meet with the Tajik authorities, when you raise questions like that, what kind of answer you get from them?
Well, look, I mean, the representative is still to visit Tajikistan, so I don't think within his tenure he has met officially, he has had official bilateral meetings with the Tajik authorities. One does get reactions to interventions, whatever publication which the representative makes, be it a press release, a press statement, be it a tweet, be it a letter which is not published but is still registered in the semi-annual report of the representative to the Permanent Council, which represents all participating states. All of these interventions are logged, and normally the representative receives answers to them through the authorities. Whatever we receive as correspondence must remain in the files, so it's not an official statement of the Tajik authorities. And I'm looking forward to the situation when Mr. Dizier would be able to visit Tajikistan and have bilateral meetings. So that's answering that question. I would want, if you allow me, to go back to several cases, because preparing for this program, I looked at the recent interventions within 2019, 2018, and they repeat themselves. It's always shutdown of the internet, blocking of certain resources, including Google services. Right. And then recently, what we have to mention here, there was an intervention on intimidation of relatives mm-hmm. of a journalist. That's right. another tool which has relevance to the points you have mentioned. And all these issues were raised by the representative.
Right.
The concern of the office and the concern of the representative is that countering violent extremism and countering terrorism propaganda actually should not encroach on freedom of the media, because as Salim John has very aptly put it, if people are not duly informed, there is a vacuum in society. There must be a robust societal debate on these issues, and it should be done by quality media, by professionally trained qualitative journalists. So that's the only way to go ahead, and media literacy and many other issues.
Thank you, Elena. As we were talking about, the situation in Tajikistan is getting more depressive by each passing day, and we have seen a number of similar cases in the past, be it like in terms of press freedom or other universal values. You know, authorities are coming up with different ways to pressure them. And it is always useful when your office kind of reacts on those things. But it's not been able to stop Tajik authorities, hold them back from continuing the repression. Is there anything you are thinking of doing in case if these journalists also lose their credentials on November 1st, other than statement, something new which would push them to hold back?
Look, you really have me there, because I cannot decide on that. The political decision is always made by the representative, so I'm sure he will think of something. I do hope it will not come to that, but I'm sure there will be some sort of reaction. On the political side, the political reaction, it's difficult to say. However, I must admit there is a group of Friends of Freedom of the Media within the OSCE participating states, and they're very active. The office is not part of it. We may not be. However, we are informed by them about their activities. And I would say that's a very powerful group of people and of the countries within the OSCE family. So.
Okay. Let me bring you Steve in here. What I was saying to Yelena, you know, whenever we hear some negative news from Tajikistan, there is certainly a reaction from this or the other office, but they were not enough to hold the Tajik authorities back from taking some more negative steps. Is there anything else could be done? Could there be something more which could be useful here that we are not yet seeing happen?
Well, maybe let's start from the U.S. As Yelena has covered the OSCE very well, and I also, you know, recently having been at the Warsaw conference in October, I did meet with, or Human Rights Watch, I should say, met with many of the delegations that make up that Friends of the Media group, and you did sense, you know, frustration, and it's a growing frustration among the ambassadors to the OSCE, and at least an acknowledgement that there could be actions within the OSCE context that they could take. I mean, some of this is sort of inside baseball for the OSCE, but sometimes we speak about this thing called the Moscow mechanism, which is where you have a group of states that can essentially launch an investigation, and they don't need the agreement of the member state, in this case Tajikistan, to actually launch a sort of human rights investigation. And they've done that recently on the case of Chechnya and Russia, and we've also seen a lot of actions on Turkmenistan regarding enforced disappearances. So, you know, I think Tajikistan is very ripe within that context, but to move for a second, what can be done in the U.S.? Well, you know, we're thinking also about the issues that matter to the U.S. government, and freedom of the media is one. And I would say the other, under this administration in particular, is freedom of religion. And, you know, when we talk about the IRPT, we're, as Yelena rightly said, we're talking about violent extremism narratives and discourse. We're also talking about religious freedom in addition to political freedom. And I failed to mention it in my earlier list of bad things that have happened just in October. So very recently, a court sentenced a Jehovah's Witness, Shamil Hakimov, to 7.5 years in jail, allegedly for inciting religious hatred, simply because he had some Bibles that were seized in his home. And as we remember, Tajikistan is one of those few countries now, along with Russia, that actually completely outright bans Jehovah's Witnesses. And I'm thinking about, and our organization is thinking about how the U.S. government, through its designation of countries of particular concern for religious freedom, actually has a legislative tool to place pressure on Tajikistan. Mm-hmm. And so I think we would look at that, and freedom of expression, freedom of religion are always related. I think that's an area where if the U.S. were to begin talking about using that legislation and potentially cutting off or restricting military aid or other kinds of aid, that might get Dushanbe's attention.
Mm. So earlier, Steve, you were talking about what the European Union is doing, whether they are paying enough attention. You are saying this in the form of question, but what do you know? Are the Europeans paying enough attention to this?
Well, we know that representatives of the EU delegation also raise freedom of the media and human rights issues publicly in Dushanbe. We saw on Freedom of the Press Day, I believe it's in May, one of the political officers there, Neil Jansen, did speak out and join the other ambassadors in raising concerns. So that's, of course, good. It's good to make statements. We need to see more statements, I should say. I mean, and we greatly appreciate the Office of Representative Freedom of the Media and the statements he's made, and Yelena's work on that too. But beyond that, the EU is contradicting itself a little bit, as is the US, because they are talking very openly about extending trade preferences. They're called GSP, the Generalized System of Preferences, which is something that Brussels can sort of award different countries and give them better trading privileges. That's something that we don't think they should be discussing at a time like this. We think it should be the opposite. They should be restricting trade privileges and talking about what Tajikistan needs to do to get off that list. And, you know, I think those conversations have to be had with President Rahmon, not just the foreign minister, because clearly the decisions are being made at a higher level.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Bruce or Salim John, feel free just to jump in here. My other question was also, we have seen these encouraging statements coming out from Tajikistan by the Tajik journalists. Has there been enough reaction so far about this particular case that we are talking about here, the deadline on November 1st? Have you seen enough reaction?
I would say it's never enough, you know, but I have been pleased. It's certainly stronger than I had expected. So this is all very good, including the letter from U.S. officials, you know, about what was going on there. So this helps. I mean, this is, you know, at the end of the day, none of these countries want to have really a bad international image, you know, even the worst of them. It's good when these things keep getting raised by international organizations and the spotlight is all of a sudden turned on and it's negative news that's coming out, because, you know, I agree with Steve that this is one of the only things that's really been proven to, like, moderate the behavior of some of these governments. Tajikistan certainly is a great example where they don't want the bad publicity. And when it keeps coming, then they alter their behavior a little bit and try to bring it more into conformity with what people in the West certainly would consider, you know, normal practices. So, and if for some reason they don't agree to extend accreditation to the Azadi journalists, then I would hope that it'll be 10 times as much bad press for Tajikistan as it already has been.
Salimjan, anything to add here? And also, I was wondering, I mean, what kind of pressure really works in Tajikistan?
It's hard to say. I heard something that maybe it works. I remember a comment under the picture of also the correspondence on the Facebook that are saying we wanted to continue our work. A guy is writing that, I don't understand. So the Tajik government is pressing on the radio, which is funded by U.S. Congress, and the next day is bringing $3 million aid to the Tajik airport, the Dushanbe airport. How to understand that? So it could be a clue that if you want something, should do something. So, but again, another type of thing that could have an impact, that I will go back to the statement of the National Association of Independent Media, NASMIT, and Media Council. At the end of their statement, if you can see that there is a point that we are ready to help you to update the regulation that signed by the Tajik government in January 27, 1995. So when they pointed out the real facts, the law, the regulation is not related to the law, and even it's against the law. So also it has an impact on the government. So it means when I'm talking to my journalists, I am always telling them to do not say anything, it's good or bad, just bring the facts. Yeah, so right. here the fact started working, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs invited experts. Let's see, is it true or not that our regulation is against the media law.
Mohammed, if you allow, can I inject one more sort of, sure, in a way, point or question for the panel? Because I'm curious to hear if you and Sanjon, Elena, and Bruce have some thoughts on this. But when I kind of briefly alluded to this, you know, this new terrorist list, in quotes, from the National Bank, what it does is, again, makes a mockery of the fight against violent extremism or efforts to prevent violent extremism. And, you know, when I think about leverage, when I think about your question of what can be done to make this government change its behavior, I think, again, back to the geopolitics, both of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, which is still there, and the equities, I guess, for NATO and the U.S. and needing to rely on Tajikistan, that issue is still there and probably restricts the U.S. government in what it is willing to do to challenge Tajikistan. But then in the fight against ISIS, when you have a government acting this way and being incredibly irrational, it would just seem that you should get some of the voices in Washington and Brussels and Berlin and other places that care about stability and care about the ISIS issue to also get into this discussion of governance and of stability in Tajikistan, and also, you know, bring some additional cards to the table. And, you know, Bruce often knows really well about how this plays out geopolitically. And I don't know if you think that's a realistic card to play, sort of, you know, Tajikistan, you're worrying us. You're really making us nervous in terms of how your situation, your political situation, is becoming more and more unstable, and especially in this lead up to the election.
That's an interesting point. And let me end the discussion getting your views on what just Steve has raised. Bruce, do you like to take it?
I absolutely agree, of course, with this, that, you know, I mean, it should, when they, you know, Steve pointed out that Humaira is listed further up up on this new blacklist that the central banks put out than Gulmohrad Halimov, who's the minister of war for a terrorist group, you know, the so-called Islamic State. How does that work? People should call them out on that and say, in what way can you possibly consider journalist who's in self-exile abroad to be, you know, more dangerous or merit more attention than someone who we know for a fact is leading terrorists in battles, you know, and they're doing horrible things. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, to some extent, some of this stuff is already going on. You know, people like Edward Lemon and others have called out the Tajik government on their abuse of the Interpol system, you know, and that needs to extend to other areas too, where when the Tajik authorities make these absurd claims about the danger of one of their nationals, you know, people have to push back on that a little bit and say, you know, this you make yourself look foolish by doing this, you know. And I agree that there's a lot Tajikistan, okay, if they have You know, I know that they're getting a lot of money from remittances now, but they still are largely donor dependent for a lot of things. And, you know, some of these countries have to say that it's hard to give aid to you guys, given the behavior of the government. You know, there has to be some kind of quid pro quo every now and then and say, we want to be your partner, but you're not making it easy to be your friend.
Okay. Also, Yelena, if you are listening to us, let's get you here. What are some of the best practices to get the Tajik authorities listen, and what can be done about it? That was the kind of essence of what Steve was raising.
Correct, yes. I mean, while the OSCE is much broader than the EU, and I really cannot, it should be the EU Agency for Fundamental Rights talking about this issue with you now. However, referring back to the issue of the National Bank, it already happened before in 2018, and there was a reaction in, I would say, about March 2018, there was a reaction by the representative where he published a press statement, but also wrote a letter to the authorities and asked for more information on exactly why certain people, some of them emigre, journalists and bloggers, were included in the list of people close to terrorists or extremists themselves. And I must say that as a result, we were informed that certain names were removed from the list. The representative also had an explanation from the Tajik authorities about why and who were included. So this is one thing. Another thing is that, you see, the OSCE is primarily the security organization, I would say. And I cannot talk for other institutions within the OSCE, but the so-called Department of Transnational Threats works a lot. Our colleagues from that department work with national authorities, law enforcement, prosecutors, investigators, and judges on the issues of countering terrorism and violent extremism. And I must say that representatives of our office, but in as much, were dear. So people representing the human dimension, the other viewpoint of things, are always part of these meetings. And we have been touring Central Asia, let's say, for a while with these issues. So there is this behind the scene work. I understand that everybody wants results. It's a bit difficult to say, but at least in 2018, there were even small, but results.
Yeah, some result. Okay, let's end the discussion with Salim John. With you as a Tajik journalist, you guys are facing these kind of challenges on a regular basis. So far, based on your experience, what has worked and what can be done now?
Thank you. If you will talk about what happened in 2016, I know for sure that the visit of Peter Burian, EU representative to Dushanbe, and directly talking to Rahmon and explaining the EU position resolved the problem of the six our journalists who were deprived of accreditation. And when I met with him in Dushanbe last September, and I asked him, and he himself recalled this situation and promised that he will repeat it again. So, and he met with Rahmon at the time, but I know nothing about the results.
Terrific. Thank you very much. Salim John Ayubov, Acting Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik Service, Radio Azadi, for your time and thoughts. And also big thanks goes to Yelena Chernyevska, Senior Advisor at the Office of the OSCE Representative for Freedom of Media, Steve Severlou, Central Asia Researcher for Human Rights Watch, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Owozi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Rahmati Kalon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis Podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.